Can you believe in a finite object possessing infinite power? Or that a mineral can be proclaimed the medicine of the 21st century? Or that the power of nature can win over the ignorance of man? If you can, you will know why our mission is to get shungite to the masses. You are entering the shungite zone. This is the Shungite Radio Show produced by Cosmic Reality Radio. Welcome to the Shungite Reality Show. It is January 4th, 2026. My name is Nancy Hopkins. With me is Derek Condon, and repeat visitor guest. Thank you.
Yeah.
Levi. So I'm going to turn it over to Derek because he's got all the news.
Yeah. We're happy to have Levi back with us. And we've got actually several topics to talk about today, all connected similarly. But I wanted to give, before we jumped in, to talk about, you know, why Levi's here and how that ties into the Shungite bees and the Natural Beekeepers Path nonprofit and what's going to happen there. There's been, and then Nancy, because you know a lot, in fact, you're probably the only one that knows what I'm just going to summarize as, weather drama around here. And I'll get into as much as I can recall, because it's been almost a literal whirlwind, as Nancy knows, excuse me, up here. But the Shungite beehives, just in quick summary, we had three of them sponsored this. So I had three beehives on our property. And that even changed. So that's part of the situation this year, the property I'm talking about. But we had three when we started at the beginning of the year. And Levi was actually the sponsor of two of those. And so right now, so as the update as of this morning, but I'm afraid I can give you that. I want to give it a little background, what's been going on. And here's where Nancy's going to probably help out remembering all this. But over the last several weeks, so we're located up in, the Puget Sound. So in the Northwest, Washington State. And so during the last few months, I'm kind of pausing here because it's a lot to wrap your head around. And I'll leave out the parts that don't really matter and just kind of get to the specifics. But for various reasons, the beehives had to be moved a couple times this year, straight up picked up out of location and then moved to another location, driven away. So where they ended up by the end of the season, as it's sometimes called, was in Concrete, Washington. And in that area, and this is where I'm going to group it all together, the weather that's been affecting everything. And it's been on a lot of the news, so a lot of you may know what I'm talking about, but we've had extreme flooding up here. We've had levee breaches, bridges washed out, a couple of earthquakes right under the Shungite beehives, and only in Concrete, Washington, as well. And this also tied to the other location. So, and then flooding all over the place, which was the biggest issue. So what happened was, and we were, and again, this doesn't really pertain, but a little bit, so I'll touch on it. Because of these weather issues.
Let me give a little recap of the weather, because that was the weirdest part of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it had been just a little bit of flooding or rain or even a little earthquake or something, you could have been there to protect the hives. But he's making phone calls to me, and I'm getting a weather update. And every time he would tell me, I'd go like, "Oh my God, this is crazy!" All right, it started raining. There was flooding happening, and he moves to the store that was safer from any flooding. Okay, well, no real big deal, because he didn't think that the house and the hives would be hurt at that time, because he was concerned about the roads and being blocked off and not getting back and forth. So okay, so that happens. Then they had this earthquake thing happening, but the earthquake was causing mudslides. And so, on top of that, they had this big windstorm, and more, and it was never stopped raining. It was raining the whole time he's telling me this. And he's giving me updates on how high the weather is, the river, and also telling me about the fact that, it was dams were breaking, and he had actually could see some antennas and stuff, and so he was able to gauge how much the water was coming up because he could see these things sticking out of the ground. And in one case, the local weather or the local radio station, I believe maybe it was a TV station, but one of your stations went down.
An AM radio station was the one that was under going underwater, their antennas and transformers and stuff near
Yeah,
a store.
not a good thing.
No,
So,
they were no dams broke either. By the way, what they were doing is just releasing. They had to, and that's just a thing during floods. They have to drive the river flow by widening the exit into the Puget Sound, or again, driving, regulating how much water comes out. So they had to release so dams didn't break. So it was just one of those things.
right. Well, that's what they're designed to do. But then it got really stupid because, I mean, you got earthquakes, you got mudslides, you got a flooding and a whole huge amount of rain, and then you got a windstorm, and on top of that, it started snowing. So all of this stuff is happening, and we're having this discussion, and he said, "Is there anything else that could happen?" And I said, "Weather-wise, I don't know. I don't think you'll get a hurricane, maybe not a tornado, but I don't know." Well, what he got was warnings of a tsunami because the whole Pacific Coast hotspot of volcanoes and stuff had started giving a lot of activity that they were actually having warnings that, keep your eye on what's happening. So it was, let's say, a very unprecedented weather event. And now I'll turn it back to you so that people understand this was crazy.
And it was one of those, and they called it, 100-year flooding, this, that, and it was a big deal thing. It broke all the records on the height of it, and lots of buildings did flood. Mystical Words did not. We're pretty close to the levee, but it didn't breach there. I actually threw my drone up at one point to go check and see what was going on and how close it was, and it was within a foot or so at the high point, where if it breached that, this part of Mount Vernon would have been flooded. For those that know where I'm talking about, but bringing it back to the bees. So what happened? So there were, I don't know, pick your random day. Some days we could get home because we lived in Concord, and that's where the beehives were. Or Mystical Where's the Business is in Mount Vernon, Washington. That's about a, I don't know, 40-minute drive in between them. And those were the two main cities that were hit by everything. So we were, and one road out to the house, just to kind of give you the visualization. So when those got flooded, or certain bridges were gone, we're not getting there. So we'd have to stay at the store different nights or hotel rooms, and it was all over the place for quite a while. And this is the first we're even talking about this, other than to Nancy. So when I did get one of the trips back to the house and to go check on the beehives because of the flooding, and it wasn't just our area, and I don't know, we're a couple hundred yards from the river. So now, if you think about it, that means all that land in that area turns into a sponge because it can't drain anywhere. So anything with any, excuse me, weight to it, including beehives and houses, cars, all of it, adjust trees big time because those were why they were falling everywhere. So we wouldn't have power, go out in the middle of the night. And we're out in the foothills of the mountains. So there's not, we're not talking cul-de-sacs and stuff like that. It's, 5 to 25 acre properties that everybody's on out there. So rural. So got to the beehives, and this was, I don't know, in the middle of this mess of weather. And what had happened was, and the house we're staying at, it the beehives were under a cover. They were in, I just have to kind of get quickly, in such a spot that any weather would have they'd been protected from, other than the ground below them adjusting. And so what happened was, and beehives get to be, depending on how many boxes you have and what's in them, how much honey or brood, Oh, I don't remember. I weighed them one time. Very heavy. I'll just put it that way. So hundreds of pounds each. So the ground subsided below them toward the river, and basically the beehives at, and I don't know when it happened, at some point tilted back so that the front entrance now, because typically on a beehive, you're going to want it slightly tilted forward. So if it rains, snow, something doesn't roll into the water doesn't flow into the beehive for a lot of reasons. It just kind of goes off the front, just like our houses, why they're pitched that way. So they sank in the back, and so they tilted back, I guess, the front would be up, and they got who knows how much snow and rain and weather, because I had to take some branches off of them. There was no way bees were moving them. And then again, the ground, sank in that certain area, so it didn't look great at all. And I say, yeah, any bees. So as far as I could tell from the outside, and this is, depending on the time of day and pick your day, but freezing weather, because we had snow. She talked about, low 30s, maybe high 20s at many times. So I assumed the bees were, I saw no life activity, none outside. And I wasn't going to go just, rip the top off and see in the middle of a snowstorm and windstorm, which was happening. The windstorm was, it was snowing though. More of a sleet at that moment, but because you just don't do that, then you're exposing them in case there is something in there. So left them alone, did what you can, because you can't, they would need to be relocated to, I guess, more stable ground. We'll have to pour a concrete pad or something. But left them, they saw no sign of activity. So I thought, oh no, that's horrible. So now I'm going to fast forward several days to this morning, or yesterday morning, as a matter of fact, where I went out there to get just, see what was left, what was going on, if anything was happening. And the only thing I can confirm right now is one of the beehives, because I only started with one and I thought, okay, well, I'm not seeing a bunch of activity. So I assumed what they would typically do is swarm off. So if their house, their beehive in this case, gets flooded or something else, or a bear tears into it or whatever, they'll grab as much as they can of the brood, the babies, and the honey, and relocate. And they'll send out other bees ahead of time to find that spot. And then, so that all happens. So that's what I assumed it happened to them, because otherwise, if they don't do that, you would see just thousands of dead bees all over the beehive, under it, at the entrance. And I wasn't seeing that. So I was, oh, well, okay. I guess they relocated before or during, or, they took care of that. It went out there, like I said, and opened up one of them just to get an idea of what was going on inside. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing bees. And this is the first Nancy's hearing this, too, because I had no idea. And I don't even know how they survived through just nonstop onslaughts. So, again, I only opened one so far and really quickly, because it didn't take long. And all of a sudden, I'm looking eye to eye with, a bunch of bees, shungite bees. So then, I modify where I can, prop it up so it doesn't continue to happen, sort of deal. So as of right now, and I'm going to probably have a chance maybe today, or possibly tomorrow, do a full inspection and re-insulation. And I'm not going to do a whole bee talk here, but rebuild their hives, the exterior part, so this doesn't, hopefully happen again, and then just, modify the soil around. But again, this was that, and it was literally over 100 years since this thing happened. So it was a big deal event. But yeah, I mean, it really, from my perspective, that's good news. I mean, and I'll get in the other two, like I said, and give an update on the next podcast. But that was pretty darn amazing to me that the bees were still in there, even in that hive, after everything they went through.
Now, Derek, at this time of the year, because of the cold coming in, the bees would have been less bees than than they were, because they die off so that at least the core of the beehive can survive. And they go into the middle of the hive, and then they get all together and they start doing a circular movement through there to build up heat to keep the queen alive, correct?
Yeah, they basically form a bee ball. You can think of it in your head around all the frames that are in there. And that's how I saw them. Took off the lid. There's an inner lid that just has an opening in the very center. So I would literally be looking down at that bee ball you're kind of talking about in there. And that's when all of a sudden, a dozen of them probably crawled out, and they didn't come shooting out because it was cold. And again, if I thought for a second they could have survived all that other drama, and they're fine because they need a lid right back on. It's not like I took the hive apart or something. That could be an issue, but they were doing just fine. They had that B ball. So what Nancy's talking about is there's, in my case, 10 frames of honey in there. I should say frames. And in these, those are where the brood are. There'll be honey on the outside frames, but if you now just imagine, say, 10 pieces of toast lined up, it'd kind of look like that. And the brood or babies, they're going to start making in the very middle frames and then work out from there. So if all of a sudden you could make the frames invisible, you would see a ball of the brood. And that's where the bees will, congregate during the winter to keep those guys warm. And then the queen's in the middle of all that. So, and then on the outside would be the honey. And then depending how many boxes you have, honey above that, it goes on and on.
Well,
So.
out of curiosity, when they're in this, that phase of their existence, do they make less of the brood and more honey? Because the brood they don't really need.
Yes, and they're not making any honey. They're living off of their stores. That's why
I see.
us as beekeepers or tenders should not take all their honey and just, well, I'll feed them fake stuff all winter. No, you leave them their honey. And that's why I said at the start of this thing, we're depending on how it goes. I've had up to how many pounds, depending on hive, you get honey. If, the weather thing doesn't happen, and who knows how many factors. But no, typically they won't have much brood during the winter. They'll keep the numbers down. Yeah, so that's a thing. It's much smaller colonies. That's why it's harder to keep them warm. So usually in this area, we'll insulate them. Lots of ways of doing that. You can pile up hay around them. Just don't cover the entrance. Or they sell fancy bee blankets. There's all sorts of ways
And the
to
only
help
time
them.
they leave the hive at that point is to fly around on the outside to eliminate, pee and whatever.
Yep. Little bathroom breaks.
Right.
Yeah. They'll just fly around, do little figure eights, take a look around, see what's going on. And that's what they ended up doing this morning when they saw, big old ball guy taking the roof off their thing, looking in there. Yeah. A few of them came out and looked and saw it wasn't a big deal and just flew back in. Yep. So, no,
Cool.
they're, yeah. So that's the partial update that I have right now that's, pretty miraculous as far, like I said, as far as them surviving all of that. And I'll get in the other two hives here again shortly and give another update. But
The other thing is that these are shungite beehives. They've been painted with shungite. They've got, so maybe the shungite helps protect them. I'm just throwing that out because to me this is kind of like, wow.
yeah, there were three, and like I said, two of them, and they're all marked or identified in various ways. And I won't get too much into that right now, but so we know who's who. So again, I'm going to tie back in our guest today, Levi. So those, the two hives that Levi sponsored were grew the most. They got the largest. They had more brood, more everything going on, more activity. And nobody's been getting updates, including Levi. It's literally been impossible. Nancy, and I won't get into all that, but Nancy understands a lot of the reasons for me not able to give certain updates, or we're in the literally moving the hives, or something going on. So this year didn't pan out as far as updates, and it wasn't any from lack of effort. I'll just probably just put it that way. Trying, but those two hives, so I can, and I'm getting to that, so I can kind of give a little update now. Did expand and were the healthiest. So I'm talking directly to Levi, and then of course listeners. But those hives did very well, and so did the third one. It did as well as you can expect. But the first two did extremely well. And then again, I'm not sure what's going on in two of them right now. I can't tell because they went through extreme, and they're all three affected a little bit differently. And I can't say, well, that one was the worstest, because they're all were tilted back, and I have no idea how much stuff went in and rain. And again, you don't just exactly tear them apart. You would, just for those, no, I'll give a little bit. You start tilting them back up. So again, whatever's in there gets out of there. And you can keep the inside dry, just like you would think if you could your house, and then so that any future rain doesn't get in, and then re-insulate and stuff like that. And I have no idea about honey or anything like that again, because I haven't had a chance to get in there. As everybody knew, the first thing was to make sure the bees have enough. And so I'll give updates on that. But there's been no harvesting of anything. There's been a lot of, well, maybe I haven't put that out, supersedures or split. What they've done, all three hives, Levi's one time more than the others. Again, just trying to give in as much personal feedback as I can, because again, he hasn't received updates. My neighbors, two of them directly came to us and told us about, he said, "I think you lost your hive. They're under my front porch, or they're behind this shed, or this, that, or the other." So I'll go out there and check kind of thing. I'm like, nope. They were Shungite bees, but what they did is they do on a typical year, they produced additional queens. And I wasn't in there plucking queens out, adjusting. Some people will make sure there's only one queen. I'm like, well, they'll figure that out on their own, especially which one. They've been doing it a while. I'm talking about the bees, because that's one of the things a lot of humans get involved in. So I let them do their thing, and I don't worry about if they fly off and see if they relocate or anything. But what they ended up doing was, again, reproducing so much additional queens that eventually they'll swarm. Half will go with her, and half will stay with one of the other queens or the initial one. So that happened three times that I know of for sure, and you can't exactly monitor that, but often, so more often than not, the whole hive will go. Ours, they didn't, which is great, by the way, not just because we want them there with us and to be part of it, but it means they were so healthy that they were able to do that. So there's an additional, minimum three Shungite beehives, and that's where they were all born in that. So any bees that would have left, because there was enough time frame in there, they were literally raised and, came out in that Shungite environment.
Now
So that's great.
you said that the swarming in a typical non-Shungite hive, that it n may not even happen once.
There's so many variables in there. It depends, to be honest. I mean, it really depends where you're at and why. I mean, often swarm or beehives will swarm and they'll just relocate, and then there'll be almost nothing left at the hive. They've just, moved out for various reasons. Maybe the new queen popped out, decided to go. We can pretend like we know why they're doing a lot of things, but swarms happen. But it's not in all of my years of beekeeping, how many hives and years, and it's typically, unless the Shungite beehives, again, there's enough numbers to do both, and that's what evidently there was. And I haven't, usually I would have more information when I'm talking about this, because I'd have gotten in the hive, looked at the frames. Okay, well, these ones are brood, these are honey, and I could figure out, how big their pantry is compared to their nursery, kind of say. But I none of that information, and not yet. And I will, but when it's the right time. And again, it's winter, so I'm not going to exactly open up the hives to any real degree. But yeah, so that, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's good news. I'm not thrilled about the weather events, but that happens. Welcome to reality. But the Shungite beehives definitely flourished, and they were doing great the whole time, even with the moves where some, and I had to, they were so big, and have, I had to bring in a friend, a 7 foot tall buddy of mine, literally, and he would physically pick these things up. We put them in the back of his pickup truck. About 5 years ago, I was picking up smaller ones myself, but those aren't my days anymore. So we did that, and that's always, disruptive. Think an apartment building being just picked up and driven somewhere. And they had to go through that a couple times. And often when that happens with beehives, if they're not completely sealed for a certain amount, definitely sealed during the trip, because they'll fly out and, you'll lose them. They'll not like it, and they'll relocate on their own. And that happens with commercial beekeepers. So if all of a sudden the truck drives somewhere with 300 hives and drops them down in these fields, it's just a percentage thing. A lot of them will just leave, some won't, and then the other hives that do stay, maybe they'll move into that box. So it varies lots of ways. But So, Levi, did you have any questions on anything I've been rambling about for what, 15 minutes now?
Well, thank you, Derek. This sounds like it's been quite the adventure. And I think that this is just phenomenal news because the whole purpose of this experiment was to create robust bees. Like that's what I wanted with the shungite experiment, is that we want to create this symbiotic relationship with these creatures so that they can flourish the best they can in the environment that we've given. And with all of the disruptions and all of the weather events and unforeseen, everything where, you weren't able to monitor the hives as much as you would have liked to, but they still flourished in spite of all of that. And I think that kind of proves proves our premise that shungite bees are healthier and more robust and will be able to survive way more than a regular hive would.
Yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head there. That's exactly how I'm seeing it here, and that's how they've been. So it's yeah, it's a and this is just talking in general to people and beekeepers out there. I mean, there's lots of things we can do for bees, but shungite's a big one, has a huge effect. I mean, most of our reality is energy, that vague word, but it is. And it has such a huge effect on that that they do become robust, as you're saying. It's yeah, that's I was so surprised when I opened that one hive. I'm like, how are they even alive? I'm like, oh my gosh. And they looked healthy. It wasn't, there's, you could tell there's different sicknesses, there's deformed wings. So lots of visual cues that I could have additionally picked up on when looking at them for that short time. And you'd notice it pretty quickly. And those weren't there. So they were doing really well. Again, I'm kind of laughing a little bit because they're just so phenomenal. So I think it's, yeah, good news too.
Do we have any plans for next year? Like, what would you like to see happen?
And there's some of that. So, and I have to be vague on this one for right now because there'll be some future announcements coming on a lot of aspects of everything we're doing. But I do have a new location where this kind of thing can't happen again. Where I'm gonna probably move them, and there's lots of variables in there. I mean, good things like a nursery whose owners I know that then we can possibly, because there are photos of the nursery different times a year, see how much of an effect the bees will have on that. So I'm just looking at all sorts of local things. But yeah, there's a probably gonna be another relocation in the spring, but in a good way. And then yeah, I just have to kind of figure it out from there. But I had lots of people wanting to have shungite beehives on their property. But then it comes into a how do I maintain them? And it's not that I have to go there every day or anything, but there is a percentage of time there. So, but yeah, we'll be, and that's good. Some of the shungite beehives will be located in what we're going to call, I guess, a shungite field, because lots of farms in this area. So, what we're going to do is gift shungite powder and or nuggets, depending on the situation, to farmers for, and this is for experiments for us, on just one row. So they plant everything. I don't care if it's corn to Brussels sprouts to whatnot, depending on the time of year. So what we're gonna do is pick one of those rows, and these are like, I don't know, a quarter mile long. So I'm not talking about 50 feet of, these are big, industrial farms we can affect. And lay shungite down them. And then some will have shungite bees as well. So at least then we can get some visual evidence of the shungite affecting the plants, the crops. Because I know it'll do that. We've already had people doing that, but not where we've been monitoring it. They go like, oh my gosh, I gotta get more shungite for this year. And I'm like, well, I told you that. Now let's do a whole line of this and actually show people the only difference is little shungite powder, or if it's a tree, because there's orchards here too, I'll go up and get some video and push a little nugget in the ground. And here's the, I'll transition this real quickly, because I realized it yesterday. So we'll call it the backyard of Mystical Wares. I had a bucket of shungite that got a powder, shungite powder, that got damaged and wet and just wasn't sellable. I'll put it that way. Not that it was bad, but it wasn't something we could repackage. So I took that bucket because again, I don't want to waste it. So then I went around and shungited the property in the back, all the trees, the bushes, everything like that. I didn't give it any more thought. And I went out there and I looked right. I do a lot, I'll just say. So I'm not usually just standing there, watching the grass grow. So, and sadly, I have to say, well, then I miss a lot. But anyway, when I was doing this, I was out in the back and I looked down. I was like, what is this? Well, what, and this happened, when did I do it? It's probably been 1 year since I did this with the shungite powder out back. So right around that, well, everything has grown in the back. All the, tr I mean, noticeably. And we have a landscaper who comes in too. I chatted with him about how he's all, yeah, these bushes all connected, because he's just such that he wanted a distinct bush. I'll just say he likes some shape, so and so. And anyway, that was kind of frustrating him because they were all just shooting out. And all of a sudden, we had a wall of bushes. I think there's six or seven of them. And then the trees, the roots, they're like 6 inches. The upper roots coming out of the ground now. I mean, it's a noticeably different thing because what, 6 years now? I've had to move different. Oh shoot, why am I blanking out of that one? Just wheel trucks, just different little wheel vehicles for moving rocks around, stuff like that. Sometimes dollies. So long story short, I'm going through this same area all the time, and I did not have 4, 5, and 6 inch roots that I had to, like a speed bump, go over. And it's not that the land settled in that area either. This is an old growth, you can call it area, and it's butted up against concrete. So I would see different things. Now there is some drama in the other part of the building, but it has nothing to do with these trees. So where I put that shungite, these things grew immensely. Well, so much, I wish I had a visual on this. Because there's a driveway in the same area where the trash man has to come in to get our big dumpster. So I'm getting at, it's another thing that triggered us, because he started, or that triggered us to figure this out. Because I talked to the guy when he happens to be out there sometimes, and he had asked me if I could remove some branches because they've all grown over, and trash truck, I don't know, 15 feet high, big thing. He was worried about him catching on his workings of the trash truck and yanking off big branches. And this, I'm like, you're right. These things were never over the driveway. So that was, again, not an experiment there, but something that, just we did, and all of a sudden drastic differences there. And there was any plan, didn't matter what it was. All the trees, there were five or six types. Talked to Nancy about them over the years for different reasons, and the bushes and all that, but every one of them responded, and they all got a large amount. Because I
Let me
wasn't.
just jump in here. I have somebody that, excuse me, has gone through, hurricane wind and flooding and that sort of thing. Even though I'm in Florida, I don't have the cold, but we've had some of that type of thing. And my experience has been that when that happens, the trees know, oh my God, we were under attack. And so they start to grow better. Faster. Now, I'm talking to you like that, and I think that that was true even before I had the shungite on the property. So I can't attest to this, but now that I'm thinking about it, I can't attest to it. But the thing of it is that when you were talking to the truck driver, did you say anything to, I mean, you probably didn't think about it, but if the question should have been asked to him, maybe you can see it the next time. Did you have other places where you had to cut back the trees, or did you see more growth in this area than you did in the others? Because he's driving around.
I guess you might notice that. No, I didn't ask him, because I didn't even tie that to the shungite on the tree thing until later. I've get smacked in the head a couple times where I figure some of the stuff out. But no, I'll run it by him. He's a good guy. I'll see if maybe you have an area where you have to drive under all these trees to get there, and maybe he noticed. Who knows? But
You also had grass and weeds coming in, correct?
if it was green and living back there, it popped up.
Even in the middle of a non-growing season, it was
Yeah, I
cold.
don't.
Everything goes kind of to sleep. So, yeah, that's something to kind of, even if it's anecdotal, reports from people,
Oh, it's, and I wasn't, I went all at all this with shungite and bees and stuff. So even a few years ago, and I won't drag this out too long, but I have a friend who's, oh my God, what was that flower that he gifted me that was in? Anyway, there's a special, he g works genetically modifying this certain type of flower that gets so tall. It's like, I don't want to say 4 feet or something. And it only gets that big. So he gifted us a couple of them. And the one in the front of Mystical Wares, remember we shungited that one? He showed up like 6 months later. And these things are sold online. I'll have to remember the name and put it on the next podcast.
Is
But
it the
this thing,
Mullen? The Mullen plants that you
there you
had?
go. There you go. Yep, that's what it was. Exactly. Thank you. Yeah, that thing went, I mean, it got
Quite get the name. What was the name?
Mullen.
Oh, Mullen. Yes, I remember you.
And he still does different things and with that, but that, and that's just one of them. I got to plant them. Look, turn my head here. I have to keep chopping pieces off this thing, and it's under LED or not LED. I don't know what these things are. Sure isn't light, sunlight, and all they have is shungite. So even again, I wasn't really going out. Let's do shungite experiments. I'm like, I know it's good. Give it to him. And all of a sudden, wake up one moment and look. I'm like, what the heck? Yeah. So that's it. We're still, well, now, Nancy, knowing me, quick pivot to the shungite fish pond. So we have a 300-gallon koi pond here in Mystical Wares for years now with zero treatments of any kind on anything. It's just three pieces of it's larger chunks. They're probably a couple pounds each at least, just sitting on the bottom. And that's all we've ever done. And these fish are growing like fish and weeds. Yeah. So, yeah, shungite has a great effect on all kinds of things. And if there were more hours in the day, I'd have more focus to look at all that. But maybe in the future. But actually, I want to bring it to why we have Levi back on the show today. I'm going to kind of toss it to you, Levi, to let me explain, but have you explain. But we had. I guess I'll tie this in first. So for the regular listeners, you know that we've started this last year and it ended up turning into a federal nonprofit called the Natural Beekeeper's Path. So if you're interested, you can go to I know it's a big address, but the Natural Beekeepers, so plural path.com, and you'll find our federal 501c3 nonprofit. And what that's based on, I'll get there quickly. Is and there's other podcasts on this where we got involved with bee accident and stuff, but the premise behind the nonprofit is so when there is another accident, which they happen nearly every year or multiple, where a truck transporting beehives from A to B gets in an accident and the beehives get knocked off or something happens, and typically they'll have to bring in the fire truck and foam them down, and all the bees end up dying. Before they get a chance to swarm off into a neighborhood or, anybody around there. So that's usually, I know real quickly there, and it's more than that, but that's typically what happens because the first responders to any accident, well, who are they? Police, fire trucks, paramedics. I guarantee you, you'll probably never find one. That'll change in the near future. Thank you, Levi. But you won't find one that can reach back to and pull out a bee suit when this happens. So think about these accidents, and if there's other people involved, let's say a car, because usually there's multiple vehicles in an accident and somebody's injured. Well, how are you going to get them out of there if you have, 300 million bees or whatever bees? I think it was 14 million they ended up calling it on this accident I'm talking about from 300 hives around you. That's just going to make the situation even worse, and it did. So in that one I'm vaguely referring to, the truck driver, well, he had to jump out of the cab at some point. And unfortunately, he was wearing flip-flops and, didn't have the safety gear for that. So that didn't end well either. So what we're doing with the nonprofit, and we've got, I don't know how many signups now. We're doing two things. We're building a national first responders group, or there's different names for it, for beekeepers. So when these accidents happen, anybody can call our nonprofit, and it comes directly to my phone 24 hours a day, and I'll answer it, and provide a list and contact information for local beekeepers or people that have the equipment or property or trucks. We're getting all kinds of volunteers anywhere in the U.S. when this happens, because that's just not built yet. And then tying it back to Levi, where he's been a help, and we'll get more into this. We're also putting together, we're trying to put together, well, I forget the name of the exact thing because I keep changing it, but the first responder, the emergency bee kit. So when the sheriff does show up and they know, oh, it's bees involved, we want to have it to where all along these transportation routes, the local sheriffs, whoever happens to be there, depending on, or police, it doesn't really matter, or fire departments, they have access to an emergency bee kit that a beekeeper myself has built and put together, so that first responder can actually have a suit and the instructions on what to do, because it matters. They might not want to throw their lights and sirens on the whole time, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But they don't know those things, and then they don't know, and they won't have a suit often. And then even maybe the duct tape to put around the suit. There's lots of parts and pieces to this kit, and that's what we're putting together. And so we were have the nonprofit running, looking for volunteer first responders. And you're not committed if you sign up. We'll just, give you a call and contact and see if you're able to. And then the bee kits. And here's where I'm gonna now finally turn it over to Levi, because I don't know all the parts and pieces, but there was some kind of a, I think, a contest, and that's where you say as much or as little as you can on that, Levi. And where he eventually gifted won a prize, and again, I'm gonna leave a lot for him because I just don't know the specifics, and had it donated to the Natural Beekeeper's Path. So that was a thing. So part of the prize was able to donate this much to the nonprofit of your choice. And, luckily, he chose us, which is going to provide the first whole bee kit I'm putting together now. And that's some of the news I'll announce in the future, because I have a lot of media friends from the first situation, the bee rescue I was on. They have their information and they say, well, contact us anytime. So I'm thinking, well, okay, you just wait. Because Levi, in this case, stepped up, and now we're going to put that together. So the first one is being built now, the emergency first responder kit, and we'll have media out there and bring out the sheriff's department, because that's who the first responders are in our local area here, and then gift it to them and with the instructions and just real quickly, all these instructions we'll say, on the do's and don'ts and what you want to look for and not, are freely available on the Natural Beekeeper's Path website for download right now. So anybody can go get them. So if you need to build your own kits before we get a chance to, expand out, or just to have the information on, again, the do's and don'ts during a bee emergency, that is available. So Levi, what can you tell us about the competition? I think it was.
Yeah, so I'm an electrical engineer at a aerotech company who is like a subsidiary of a giant, Fortune 500 corporation. And something that corporate was doing is kind of they like the idea of Shark Tank, where you have a bunch of entrepreneurs come and pitch their projects to investors, and they're gonna make them. And so what they decided to do was create an intrapreneur program where they would have employees pitch their projects, and corporate would then decide if they'd develop those projects. And so I had this idea a while ago on ways to manage burning battery cars, because that's been such a problem, and it's going to become more of a problem as more of these battery-powered vehicles are on the road, and putting out lithium fires is so difficult. And so my idea was to just pick up the fire and move it somewhere else so it could be safely fought. Because a lot of times when you've got a bunch of cars parked next to each other, one catches on fire, that fire spreads to the other cars, and so you've got a pretty large loss of property there. And so that was kind of my pitch, and so I had to kind of develop a Shark Tank pitch where to deliver that to the board. And like I didn't win, but and so they're not going to produce my idea. But it did come with, like your typical corporate, I get a polo shirt and a little plaque and like $100 gift card. And then it's like, oh, you can also donate to a 501c3 in the name of the corporation. And I was thinking, well, what am I going to do with that? And then I remembered I knew a guy with some bees that also has a 501c3. And so that's when I chose the Natural Beekeeper's Path to donate my prize to.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. I mean, what a great idea you're talking about too. So, I mean, I don't know if you want to get too much into that, but did you have to, it was it like sketches or did you show them graphics? And I don't want to like release your idea either. I mean, it's
Well,
interesting.
they're not going to build it, and so and it's basically a safety thing. My initial idea was to have it residential, but the corporation is mainly for like they mainly service like government and B2B contracts, and so they weren't really interested in the residential. But I was thinking you would integrate just like a movable cart that would pick up, like if you're charging your car in your garage. Then, if it detects a fire, it could open your garage door and move your car outside. And that was the initial idea. And that kind of morphed into you could have like a autonomous robot that could then monitor a fleet of vehicles and then monitor for a fire and then pick up an individual vehicle in as part of the fleet and move it to a designated burn location that's already been pre-staged for fighting lithium fires. And so it could kind of morphed to match more of the corporate needs of the corporation instead. But yeah, if anybody wants to build that, they're welcome to.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it'll be helpful. I think you're right. We may need that, unfortunately. Yeah, okay, that's interesting to hear about more about that, because like I said, I didn't know exactly what it entailed or what you had gone through. But I mean, again, I want to thank you again just very much for the donation and what you're able to help us, get going with here. And we'll do a future show when I do get it all put together and sorted out. And then again, get it announced on this end. But I think even bringing it back to the bees we were talking about at the beginning, that's good news as far as them surviving. I had no idea. And then just everything. So it's all information. Nancy, did you have any questions you want to ask Levi?
I'm thinking about what you're talking about. It would seem to be a very expensive thing for a given residential owner.
Yeah, it would make more sense if it's tied into the battery charging system, because already to install that system it's like $10,000, and to add kind of a one-shot robotics thing on top of that, I think you could do it for around like an additional $5,000 or so, which then you look into like how home insurance works, and I've had to deal with home insurance before, and if they can find an excuse not to pay out, they will take it. And if they find out you're charging lithium batteries on your property, I could definitely see that being, oh well, you were doing this dangerous thing, and so now we're not going to cover any of your home insurance stuff. And so then and so it was kind of a way to kind of mitigate the potential loss of life there as a safety thing.
Well, also your loss of a home. I figure anybody that's buying an electric car, it has money. So they're probably in a, an expensive house. And I was surprised at the cost because that seems much less than what I was thinking in my head.
Yeah, for the fully autonomous one, that would be definitely, hundreds of thousands of dollars. But I was thinking of just something that was just barely smart enough to d decide that there was a fire and then move a car, 20 feet out into the driveway. And that's kind of like my base model of what I wanted it to do.
Very interesting. Good luck with that.
No, thank you.
I'm wondering if you shouldn't maybe talk to some of the people like at Tesla. I mean, I don't think that they'd want to admit that there's fires, but
Yeah, that's the other thing is no company wants to admit that their cars are going to be a problem. And China actually just issued a mandate that lithium fires can't happen. And so I'm interested to see how they actually solve that problem, because it's a problem of chemistry.
Very interesting. Let me ask you, what got you into interested in the bees?
Let's see. Well, I just started listening to Derek after he was on on a podcast with Grimerica, and I was interested in all the stuff he had to say about Shungite and everything. And and bees are really important, and everybody loves them. And we need to figure out a way how we can support these creatures that are so critical for the success of, all animal and plant life on the planet. And we need to figure out ways how we can kind of undo the damage we're doing to their ecosystem. And I think the Shungite is definitely worth exploring as a way to go forward with that. And in just the past couple of years, a lot of my family have decided to move back to the farm and have started keeping their own bees. And so I'm trying to get them to buy some Shungite hives and get those on the family property.
Well, there's so much about the Shungite with the bees. Yes, it's electromagnetic, but it's also if you go completely Shungite in the farm and this sort of thing, it will take out lysophate from the soil and a lot of toxins. And if you've got like a stream or something on your property or even the water well you might be using, it's also will purify the water sources. So, I mean, one of the reasons that I got very, very much into the Shungite was reading a report that came out. Well, there's been a lot of them since, but it was the Europeans, and they noticed that, especially, I think it was Germany, that it was like people that were taking care of parks. And they realized that there seemed to be a lack of bugs, insects. So they got people to put this mesh on their windshield and just drive around the park to capture whatever the insects were out there to be able to get a count, because the bees tell us. You look at them, you can count them, you can see if they're getting bigger or not. But some of the other very beneficial insects that are out there, you don't get that kind of monitoring. So, and it's a lot of the people that study this, they're calling it the I think it's the fifth extinction event. And all over the world, they've noticed this drop in insects. So it goes way beyond the bees. But and I just thank you for being so supportive of what Derek's doing. It's just an incredible, there's some extinction events that humanity cannot possibly deal with. But this one, all we have to do is verify that the Shungite does what we say it is. And then just get Shungite all over the place to do what it does. And is it expensive? Well, it would be to do a worldwide thing, but even in our own gardens, in our own yards, in our own farms, we can make a difference. Not just with the bees, but with everything that's around it. So I thank you very much.
Yeah, it's, I don't know if there are other topics or updates because me, Nancy, I've had a whirlwind of a life these last couple months, which is not unusual that we want to give updates on right now. But the next, before I even let you answer, the next update on the Natural Beekeepers Path nonprofit, again, the gifting of the first bee kit, we will get video. We'll put together some kind of video podcast, at least put it on YouTube and Rumble. So we can share the video we get and that, but that's the next thing coming up. And I'll probably wait till, a little over a month or so at least until it gets more closer to spring, weather-wise to do that. But that'll be.
I saw this little clip on the television news, and it was in Facebook. It was a posting by somebody who said that they were a truck driver, and they've been doing it for 20 years or so. And he tells a story about seeing this woman on the side of the road who obviously was in distress. And he said, I felt that I needed to help her. So he slows down and stops. And he said his her initial reaction was one of, oh God, because he says, I'm a big guy, but she was trying to get to the hospital where her daughter was having an emergency operation. So he said, I'm really here to help you. I'm not going to hurt you. I'll take you there. And he went way, out of his way to get her to that hospital. Just the update, she got there in time. The daughter is fine. And this woman has been sending him Christmas cards since. Now, what he did was that, because you got all these truckers that are connected by CB, and he started talking to them, and he said, we should be good Samaritans, and if we see somebody broken down, instead of just driving by, we should at least stop because we can call for help over the CB. Your CB tells a trucker that the trucker happens to be someplace where they can make a phone call to local people to help her. And so they started that. And he said that the organization has like over 20,000 truckers now that are, good Samaritans. It's like an organization. And as you were talking, I thought, gee, you ought to be able to somehow or another. And I didn't, I mean, it's like I'll go back and see if I can find it to give you. Maybe he left a contact thing, but if you could get the truckers to also, if they see a truck that's got bees on it, that they know, well, gee, there's this bee thing that, and know what to do to make a call that will get people there without trying to get all the locals lined up too. But just an idea.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea, actually. It's just, I know we're going to start with our kits, of course, with the main routes along the migratory routes where they take them from. And that, in the case of our accident I responded to, they were going to, gosh, what was it, South Dakota, Nancy? Do you remember? I think that's where the driver said he was going to.
I think they were going. It seems like they had a California thing and then they were supposed to go someplace else.
It was just multiple states is my bigger point. That yeah, they
Right.
were when they do these, we're not just going from farm to farm. Sometimes these on my last trip to Arizona, which was here recently, yeah, I saw a couple of, I don't think I even got to tell Nancy about it, but they're still transporting them during the winter as well. So it's year round. And I had no idea, I didn't give it really any thought, but all of a sudden I was driving back, just up and down Interstate 5 on the West Coast, and I see these, and this was, I don't know, what, a couple weeks ago. Yeah, big rig full of 300 plus beehives on it, netted very well and all of that, so that was good. But yeah, so they're moving them this time of year, and maybe to a warmer climate, I don't really know. But what I did, glean from it all was, okay, it's year-round movements. They're just not just during the warmer months. So it's, which makes it even more important that these emergency bee kits that we're going to put together can be along those routes. And then there's lots of information for anybody that's interested on, again, the naturalbeekeeperspath.com, to where you can sign up for free. And even if you just have a pickup truck and you're like, well, I can show up and help. I mean, that's a thing too. You don't have to be a beekeeper because we'll need volunteers along all the routes. And there's more information on there about what we're doing. We're getting close to the top of the hour here. But was there anything else you wanted to? Anything we didn't ask you, Levi, that you wanted to maybe
Well,
tell
I'd
people?
like to ask Levi, is there something that you would like to mention or talk about?
Well, I was kind of wondering on what Derek's funding goals for his charity.
Yeah, okay. Now we've and we're guesstimating because I've looked along the routes and how many there are and what's potentially feasible as far as putting these kits together. But I think we could cover enough of the various routes in the US with these kits for around $50,000. And then, of course, if for some reason we had an abundance of more resources, well, then we would make them closer together so that the responders wouldn't have a 2 hour gap in between, where somebody could show up with the kid. Because again, so I'll give you more information because I'm glad you brought that up. Because we're given the first kit, and these kits, I'm just being really vague, just not to draw this out, but they come with the suits, they come with instructions, lots of tools that would be needed at these type of accidents. But that's only going to reach so far. So let's say when we do give this first kit out here locally, where this accident actually happened, and it's, I don't know, maybe 45 minutes away from me. Well, what if it happens the next accident 3 hours away? And then, so now that's a 6 hour almost trip to get that kit there, if they even know about it. So what I'm getting at, because I could drag that out, is the more we can get as far as these emergency kits peppered along these routes closer together, the better it's going to work out for everyone, not just the bees, but all the humans involved, just every living thing. So the soft guesstimate when I was doing the math, if we could, because they're not exactly cheap. Now, the next step is where I might as well go ahead and kind of put this out now. I mean, we're open to assistance in the form of, and I'm just talking about all the listeners out there. If someone knows someone or some connection to where we can get with these manufacturers and let them know, hey, this is a, because I'm just, to be blunt, juggling a lot right now. And I'll just put it like that. So even things like this that are very important, I can't always get to. And I'm saying contacting the manufacturers to see if maybe we can get, if, heck, the best scenario, if they can donate some to us and we'll advertise and say where we got them from. I mean, so if we're talking bee suits, put your logo on there, stuff like that. Because this is a federal nonprofit. It's legit. It's going to go to a great cause that affects all of us, not just one group. So that's a big net there. But we do, I need to figure that out. Maybe get volunteers or somebody that can help contact. Because I mean, believe it or not, I have to have duffel bags, and I won't go on and on, but there's dozens of items that, because I need to have, I don't just hand them a suit and some tools. I got to have it in a kit with instructions, and it takes a lot to do that. And we didn't make no money. It's a nonprofit. We're not making a nickel. It all will go to this cause. So that's one thing we're trying to do. So the initial would be getting those 50 kits out. And again, those first 50 or so could turn into 150 if all of a sudden B suit manufacturer ABC steps up and does this, or there's other things we need, different smoker tools and devices. But so that's one thing that we would need assistance with that would expand this as well.
Well, Derek, do you sell directly to anybody that wants to expand once they've got the kit and they understand it? Because in most cases, I would think it would be your local people that may have heard or even encountered that problem, but they're normally governmentally associated with a county. And if they could go to the county and say, you're, because the county takes up a lot of area, we should have. Every county should have this ability and let them buy it.
That's all right, we're going to do all the options. So what I'm actually doing is contacting, it's called a guild. So there's a sheriff's, there's different guilds throughout the US. The one we'll just talk about would be the Sheriff's Guild. Because then I'll use them to reach out to all the sheriffs and get it in their flyer, their media thing, whatever they do, and say, hey, there's this nonprofit, blah, blah, blah. And we can get these kits for your sheriff's department at this discounted cost. Well, I got to figure out that discounted cost. Rather than me just going on the shelf and buying a $300 bee suit every time, because if I can get someone to help out, get us at least maybe those at, some donation or cost or something, we can do more. Because I want to kind of do this the right way and have as big of effect as we can, and get it out there. So I'm still working all the parts and pieces, and that's why it's kind of a reach out here saying, hey, if you know somebody or something, that can maybe help out in this, we're open to that because I can't do it all alone. I'm not, because look, Levi stepped up. I mean, that was just so exciting to see. And then, Jalissa shows me, we actually got the first donation for this that'll go towards this. And I'm like, amazing. So yeah, we're really excited. So every little bit actually helps.
Yeah, I really like the idea of going and trying to find those corporate sponsors for the equipment because every company is looking to reduce their tax burden. And with your tax status, that's going to be a great way for them to reduce their reportables.
No, that's a good point, and I'm just not that familiar in that realm on how to do all that. That's why I'm kind of putting it out there. Somebody knows something, and it wasn't free to start this nonprofit. So, I mean, we're doing everything we can on this end. I'll just word it that way, to make this happen, and it is now again reached that status, which is great. But now here's where we start, and I'll probably have to do a future podcast on it. But reaching out to if somebody knows, I mean, even if somebody if. A few listeners get out there and start sending some emails or messages saying, "Hey, here's a good cause." And you're right, they need to put their money somewhere. I mean, the bees will be great, and we'll give them promotions too. Again, I mean, put your logo on the things if you need to, and we'll because I understand how the world works. I get it, and it's all good from the donation perspective. So now the kids, like I really vaguely mentioned, but I mean, even the duffel bags. So I need. Duffel bag company, whomever that might be, with large enough ones, because there's like equipment we're putting in there. Stamp it with your logo, and then and we'll promote that as well. But I literally again don't have time in the day to contact all of these either. So it's and then and there's nobody else running the nonprofit. It's Nancy, Jalissa, and myself all, and we're juggling 50 other things more than that on the side. So yeah, every little bit helps. Yeah, no, thank you. I can't even say thank you enough for what you did because you're drawing attention to this now simply by that, and then us having the podcast and more people. So, yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah, the hardest part with these nonprofits is remembering to ask for help because it's kind of goes against the rugged individualism. But in this case, yeah, this is what needs to happen is we need to ask and say, yes, if you are able to, please donate to the Natural Beekeeper's Path because it is not one of the ones where not one of the nonprofits that's just going to go to corporate parties and all that. This is actually doing good work that's going to keep people safe and keep bees safe. And so that we have like a next generation.
No,
Well,
that's a
in
great.
regards to the insurance people, when the truck thing happened, their attitude was, don't try to save the bees, let them all die and the insurance company will pay for it. Well, that is really sad that they would, it's such a scam. No, they've got to get focused on saving the bees because every bee counts.
And every donation, by the way, there's not, oh, a percentage of admin fees. No, I'm doing all that. I'm covering all that. That's not a thing. Every single penny will go towards all of this. I'm going to have to publish the numbers so we show everything. It's just a great cause for the bees, again, that we all benefit. And then again, those that are involved in the accidents, that's we bring back to the truck drivers, again, the sheriffs, the firemen, the ambulance. I mean, we had tow truck drivers. At this accident I'm talking about, that showed up that they had to get out of there. You're not going to get out and take care of the vehicles on that. So just vaguely imagine that, millions of bees around you. What are you going to do without some kind of bee suit or equipment and even the knowledge of what not to do or to tell the local neighbors what they need to do because the bees are going to swarm. And what if neighbor so-and-so has an issue with that? Well, they need to know that 14 million bees are flying around so they can close windows and doors. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts to this, and there's just not a place out there to get that other than the Natural Beekeeper's Path. And I'll keep expanding that with the website with more information and contact info where I can.
Do you have the video that we did? Because Derek, when he got there, he had his cell phone, so he's taking video of being inside this enormous beehive, bee ball. It was just amazing. The sound was amazing. So, do you have that video on your website?
Oh yeah, it's available. There's a whole spiel. I wrote a little story about it, and people can see what she's talking about. You'll see the 300 hives, all in high def video that slid off of the truck, and me walking around in between them, giving you a visual, an idea of what actually happened. Because usually they want to get these things cleaned up pretty quickly, and nothing to see here. But yeah, I got a lot of video of that and the after effect, what was part of it as well, which I can't get into too much of that. But yeah, they were some of the hives were put back together. You can't always put them back together because think maybe a pile of dominoes, they all fall in different areas, and so you don't really know. So there was an issue after the fact as well. And no matter what, all of this can be helped with the initial responder kits. That's the initial thing. And then the contact, because it's not, you don't want just, well, one sheriff showing up and he's got his suit, take care of it all. No, that's why we have their first responder network as well. And lots, again, I don't even know how many people, it's all automated on the website where anybody can go sign up, state if they're a bee person, they got a suit or land, we could put the beehives if we needed, or a truck or whatever, to help out. So that'll be another thing, because they didn't have anywhere to go. I just happened to be told about it. Jalissa let me know, and I'm like, well, who else is going to show up? There's not a, until now, emergency bee network responders, to where, and then how they'll know about that is again through the guild, and then the fire department guild. Those different organizations, or unions sometimes, that we're going to contact once we have these kits. And again, if we can get people to help us out, get the kits cheaper, we'll provide them, free when we can, but hopefully at least discounted for them, however that all works out. And then they know who to contact. And again, they can contact me personally, and I'll get those bee responders there, depending. And they've already responded across the whole US. Whenever I look at the list, it's just on a Google Sheets document. It all ends up at the end of the software I wrote, with a name and number and their info, and I get to look, and I'm, wow, that's amazing. People are often volunteering. I have a flatbed truck. Even if that's all I got, they'll say, that's yours if you need it, kind of thing, in whatever state. So, and we need more of that, because we need a whole lot of them, because you never know where these accidents happen. And then they need to know, and that's where I was bringing up the guilds and unions and all that again. They'll know to put out in their newsletters, or however they do it, that here's the number you need for when there's a bee emergency. Because I was, of course, a correctional officer for years, and we had a list of numbers for this, that, or the other thing that happened, the emergency. So we want to get the natural beekeeper's path, first responders phone number on those call sheets. So first thing they know, wait, isn't there a organization we can call? And then we'll be on it 24 hours a day. I will drop everything and we'll get on that. So that's the whole premise behind it. Was there any other, we did, well, we just a little over an hour show, so that's there. Any other thing you wanted to bring up, either Nancy or Levi?
I
Nope.
just wanted
Go ahead, Levi.
to thank you again for taking care of my bees.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, again, there'll be a bigger update here, hopefully in the near future on those as well. It's no, yeah, and I appreciate you and involved in that and getting them going. And there was other things, in the background that we've talked about everyone too. We'll do another future show on. But I just appreciate Levi and people like him that actually, even if the person, so whoever I'm talking about, just talks about it or sends a link or says, hey, you might want to try this crazy stuff called shungite. All of that helps, all the way up to having donations given to us. So wherever you land in that, it's appreciated, and every little bit of energy matters, because it's all going to come around and help us all in the bees. So no, you're welcome, and thank you. And Nancy, you want to, I guess,
Yeah.
probably wrap up this show, and then, yeah, we'll talk about future ones.
Right. Well, the reason that we haven't been up is because Derek has been playing with the weather. And so we're going to try to get back into an every other week type of thing. And we thank you for supporting us as far as the radio listeners. And Levi, again, it's an honor to know you. You're very, very special.
Well, thank you.
So, Derek, you want to say bye?
Yeah, we appreciate everybody being here. Thank you for listening. Like Nancy said, we're going to ramp up the podcast, and then just keep more information going out, because there's lots to share. And yeah, thank you again, Levi, for all your support.
And Levi, have a blessed 2026.
You
Okay,
too.
everybody out there, thank you for being here, and we'll see you next time. Be safe.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Shungite Radio Show, produced by Cosmic Reality Radio. Thank you for being here. Be safe.